I guess we got to say welcome back. I mean, are we even, is there an accurate way to say we've been gone a long time?
I mean, I would say it exactly like that. Yeah. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Dude, Mace never actually made the comeback.
No, exactly. He announced his return, but right. There wasn't really much behind it after that.
No. That song, let's be honest, we liked it because it was Mace rapping, but that was not a good song. No. And I'm glad we don't hear it anymore.
Let me stop talking disrespectfully about Mace, but yeah, I mean, he's not doing that much for me. I'm not gonna lie.
No, I don't know what he's doing now. Is he back preaching or?
He cropped up in the hip hop media recently because he had some crazy shit to say about Diddy. I mean, probably accurate. If it was like accusing Diddy of robbing his artist, then then it's like this is, one. Why is that new slander? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not, you know. Anyway, but that's all I know about what Mace is up to these days.
I just saw today that Diddy had another kid, and I remember thinking, like, yes. How old is he? He's got to be 60-ish.
You know, my man is wearing loose boxers around the house. That guy does not wear briefs. He doesn't sit in the hot tub. He keeps his testes the right temperature because he is fertile. He does not miss, dude.
No,
he's shooting bullseyes every time. Yeah, and then Young Miami, his like one of the city girls, that he's with. I guess she's freaking out.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, the city girls is a thing that I am aware of. Like, I'm not the dude who's fallen off of rap. I've chosen to, like, recognize what's good and acknowledge that the music's not for me anymore. You could tell me, I mean, I like Lil Durk. I like a lot of them, but it's also not for me. Like, the messages are not, they're not speaking to where I am in my life.
Dude, yeah, 100%, man. So I don't use Spotify because I use YouTube Music because Industrial Savage Revolution and its consequences have been a disaster for the human race. But my year in review for YouTube, I was just thinking, like, damn, dude, this is like nothing that is close to on the radio. Well, so Kendrick's album, Mr. Morale, the Big Steppers, that stayed on repeat, mostly because of a lot of shit I was going through in my life. But then my number one dude, Radamiz, from New York, who's a rapper that I've produced some tracks for. He was my number two most listened, so I'm keeping it in-house. Then, like, an indie band from the early 2000s, Block Party. I don't know if you've ever heard of Block Party. I was in the top 0.1% of Block Party listeners. The last, that's just random shit, but it's like, I don't know. The reason why I like Block Party so much is because there was a CD in my car in high school when I was, that was their album. Like, that's the only reason why I like them so much. I don't know.
It's weird. You know what? I don't have any judgments. For some reason, every few years, I'll go back and find ? Asylum's album. Was it great? No.
Did it matter
to me at that time? Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
But one of the questions that I had for us, because maybe we should tell everybody, this is kind of our year in review. We haven't been here to talk to you, but we're still going to judge the year because America.
It's been a wild year.
One of the questions I had for you was, how do I keep forgetting about Kendrick Lamar? Like, it's not that I don't enjoy him. It's not that I won't listen to the albums on repeat, but the moment I stop listening to them, they are actually gone. Like, I don't recall them existing.
That's an interesting observation because I've kind of been thinking about that as well. He doesn't, there, as a percentage of the output that he has, most of his words are profoundly said. They aren't necessarily like, that it's not like a phrase or a hook that like sticks in your mind very much. I mean, the like Section 80 and Good Kid, Mad City had some of that, but like Damn, there's very few things from Damn that are like, that's a phrase that sticks in my mind kind of thing. So I think I know what you mean. But yeah, I mean, he also doesn't make songs to be, you know, like a Drake hook is in your mind all the time. Like, he doesn't write that way. He just doesn't. structure and stuff.
I remember hearing his album this year and thinking, someone had just released something fairly recent around that same time, and I can't recall who it was. It may have been Beyonce. And I remember that the Hive is going to kill us for this, but I remember thinking, wow, there's nothing on this album I'd like to hear again.
You're talking about the one where she's on the horse on the cover?
Yeah, on the horse. And then I remember Kendrick's album came along, and I remember thinking to myself, this is phenomenal work. Everyone should hear this. This is the album of the year. And for a fact, I know a month later, I couldn't even remember the name of the album or if I had heard it. I don't know what it is about Kendrick's music. I love it when I hear it. Once I hear it, I'm engrossed and will listen to it from front to back several times. But the moment it's moved away from the existing zeitgeist of my mind, if you will, I've forgotten that he's released music.
Yeah, dude, I don't know what to say about that. I listened to that album like front to back throughout the entire year. Throughout the year. And when Damn came out, I did the same thing with Damn. I was just listening to Damn the other day because I was like, man, remember that album. Whenever he drops something, I spend basically the year listening all the way through all of it. Like, that's the way I consume him.
Someone was highly offended recently when I said that J. Cole had passed Kendrick and it was Kendrick's fault. And it's because, we've talked about this a million times, whether on air or not. The list of the top 10, the mythical top 10, is so incredibly nebulous that you have to, you know, you can skew it anyway. It's like statistics. You can skew it anyway. Are we talking about commercial viability? Are we talking about cultural impact? Are we talking about spit? Are we talking about intricacy of lyrics? There's too many ways that you can parse the list. But just in recognition, J. Cole has built this mythology of being the guy who never misses. He's built this mythology of Cole is coming. And there's, even though he may not be saying it, the Cole is coming starts to build this momentum, and he's never failed to meet that. Well, he failed that one album. What was the one he did where it was he was married and happy and no one was happy with him? It was after, I think, was it before KOD or was it after?
That must have been after KOD.
Yeah. Let's be honest. You've never heard that album. Or if you have, you've tried your very best to not remember it.
No, I don't. I literally have no idea which one you're talking about.
You know what? We're going to look it up real quick. But my point being that Kendrick may be hurting himself by just dropping albums. He may just be dropping albums, and then because there's no build to it, and he sometimes feels, rightfully so, he's telling us things, you know, instead of just dropping albums. He's standing on a mountaintop. He's brought down the tablets. And people don't like that sometimes. People don't want to hear you telling them the word of God, so to speak. It was called For Your Eyes Only.
So that's a thing I've definitely thought about is he doesn't I feel like he doesn't go through an editing process where the layer of filtration is how palatable is this to people? Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing is his singles aren't they aren't singles. You know what I mean? It's just this is kind of, so on Mr. Morale, there's that song Die Hard is very radio ready, as is Silent Hill, the Kodak Black track. But you're right. He doesn't package it like he's not making music that could be turned into TikTok sounds very easily, right?
No, he
I think he intentionally presents it all as an album because he has an album's worth of things to say. So that's I get what you're saying, that he doesn't do it the other way, but it's also people don't do it his way either. I think it's easier to make something that's easier, more digestible or whatever, than to do it his way, where it's this is a fucking thesis, or this is a huge, a comprehensive snapshot of where he's at as a person. That's the other thing, man, that I had an art teacher a while ago. His name was Mr. Rukert, when in high school, who said that like a good piece of art, after you consume a good piece of art, you should kind of feel like you know the artist more, like personally, you know them better. And I feel that with Kendrick every single time. Every single time I listen to his albums.
You've brought me to two questions, and I'll go the social TikTok route. One, and this is probably a loaded question, is Twitter dying or evolving? Mm. And two, has TikTok ruined music?
Twitter, Well, I don't think it's dying because you'll still have people on Twitter. The question is, so it's definitely evolving. I mean, in a sense, that evolution is a death of what it originally was, which is, you know, some form of dying. But it'll stick around, and people will just use it in a different way, you know. And honestly, like, maybe that's a good thing. So there's like two, because of the work that I do and the art that I make and stuff like that, there's like two Twitterverses that I'm a part of. One is the politics part of it, like, you know, international, you know, politics and stuff like that. And then the other part is like the music, is like music and that, you know, sort of creatively oriented Twitter. The two don't really touch each other, but I feel like if the politics one went away and there's less like self-congratulatory like discourse, so to speak, that'd be a good thing for humanity. It'd be a good thing for me, at least. It'd be a good thing for my sanity. So maybe if that goes away, that's fine. Now, in terms of, also, Elon Musk is just an odd individual.
Well, let me stop you there.
That one picture of him on his yacht where he's like translucent white and his body is, it looks like he's part Cybertruck. Like he was partially grafted onto a Cybertruck chest. Anyway,
I want to derail you for a second because I was talking to some people and I was trying to remember, how did the universe give us Elon Musk? I do not remember where he came from, how he's rich, any of that stuff. He just was there one day.
So his family owned emerald mines in South Africa. So,
Out to colonization.
So there's that layer. there's that layer.
Somehow it always rears its head.
And so he had you know, a background of substance, shall we say. And but then he made his money by making PayPal, I think.
That's what he did. Okay.
Yeah. PayPal, and then the technology that people like, that's used for Venmo and everything. And he made some other companies too.
Elon Musk. Has there been a name uttered in the same sphere as Elon Musk, Kanye West, Joe Byron?
Joe Byron? Yeah. Voting for Joe Byron.
I am doing our best to avoid a Kanye conversation, so we're going to veer sharply away.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask.
But speaking of controversial, R. Kelly released an album from jail.
He said that he didn't, though. He said that somebody else did that. Somebody on his team did that. Either way, dog, it's not looking good for Kells. And nor should it. Like, come on, man. Come on.
R. Kelly, man.
That's a shame. But I don't want to let your TikTok question go unanswered.
Oh, yeah. And before you answer, TikTok does have its own record label now as well. So that's another little bit of information to throw at you.
So, one thing that I think is important to keep in mind, the framing, and again, I don't necessarily disagree with the framing of the question, but let's add a little bit of context. The way that music has been consumed, like music, little music history lesson here. The advent of like going to a concert to see somebody play something is like a very, very new phenomenon in the broad history of music. Like Wagner, the composer, built the first sort of like concert hall in the Western musical tradition to stage his own operas. So like it's like kind of a new thing for music and the consumption of music to be like, you know, a spectacle like that. Anyway, the technology that exists in the world or is used to make music has always influenced how it's been consumed as well. So, you know, magnetic tape existing, like, you know, allowed music to be broadcast over the radio and stuff like that. Like, before, you know, before vinyls existed, there was like wax cylinders that had to be, each one had to be made and like couldn't be mass copied. So there was like a limit to all that stuff. So all the stuff that I'm referencing is just to make the point that technology has always influenced how music is made, one, and how it's consumed by people. And TikTok is no exception. So with that in mind, is it killing music? No. It's definitely exerting pressure on the way that a good chunk of people in the world make and consume music. Absolutely. People make music to be TikTok sounds now, right? Like, it's not just those things as well. It's also giving people an opportunity to like engage with or discover music that they wouldn't have otherwise. Like the fact that the like bed squeak sound from Some Cut by Trillville like that's hilarious to me that is a TikTok sound now. But like people now hear that song a bunch, or you know, any number of other like things that were past their sort of like original debut and are now being revitalized in this way. So I don't think it's a net negative, and I don't think it's a net positive. It's a big change, certainly, but it's not necessarily a net negative or a net positive. And it's also not new. Again, going back to the history of it, it's not new for something like this to make a change.
As part of the year in review, I'd be remiss in not mentioning one of the greatest musical moments that TikTok brought us this last year. The young man who admitted that he timed his efforts to a specific song. Did you catch this? I had heard of Hudson Mohawk prior to to all of that. We're not going to get into it, people. You need to look it up. Just type Hudson Mohawk in TikTok and enjoy the thread. But he got a lot of shine this year that could only have happened because of TikTok. And I would hazard to say that he got some dates out of that. Not interpersonal dates. I mean, you know, appearances. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, there's always an upside to every downside.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's just going to be a thing that music adapts to.
So do we foresee the death of record labels as they exist now at some point? I mean, we've been chipping away at the structure of commercialized music for probably a decade now. I think MP3s and not MP3s because they're just a file format, but the ability to compress music and send it rapidly led to a little bit of a change in the way they did things. Then you had the kind of a la carte services popping up, Spotify being quite a leader in that. Those also functionally changed the way record labels had to produce music. You don't see artists, you know, putting out albums to get, you know, for those of us who are a little older, you went to the store, you bought an album, and the artist made money, a percentage of that, on that purchase. And that had to change. To quote Joe Budden, what's a stream worth? That's probably the only time we'll ever quote Joe Budden on this pod, but... he was right, though. What artists had to figure out, record labels had to figure out, how do we exist in this new world? And now Spotify, Apple has, you know, become a major player. They also are I believe, have a record label now. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we're going to see the rise of the a la carte platforms being the record label. You know, I don't need to go to RCA to have them co-sign me into a 9-album or a 9-track album and then be beholden to them for 4 more if it pops off. I can submit to whoever and get it playing. SoundCloud was a major resource earlier. I think maybe we're seeing kind of them hitting a nadir, if you will, because they, you know, all the majors are really starting to interrupt that platform as well. But I'm wondering if we see the end of record labels as they exist now.
I definitely think so. I mean, and again, it goes back to like, they're changing, right? They're changing to what is like available as a business model in the industry at this point. So they don't, the infrastructure that prints and like packages CDs, like that's not an entity for most artists right now. Like if you're Taylor Swift or you're Beyonce or, you know, whatever, then your album will be in Target or your album will be in Walmart. And that's where you have like, you know, and a label infrastructure that's doing those things. But the thing, like, I think it would be more accurate to think of labels as banks right now. They don't really even do artist development anymore. As far as I can tell, major labels. Like,
well, that's what TikTok's for.
Right, exactly. But like they have the capital and financing to produce like major productions, right? Like to put on tours, to put on festivals, that kind of stuff. Like that's what they're good for. And the only time it makes sense for a artist to take a loan from that bank to do those things is if an artist just can scale up their audience and just needs the financing and stuff to, in order to scale it up, to like make themselves larger. Right. But for most artists, like you don't need what a label can offer you in order to make money at this point. So like, if you want to be like a star kind of thing, like you need major labels to do that. They're still gatekeepers of you know, that level, right? They're still gatekeepers of that level.
Mass marketing.
Yeah. They will remain that way. And you know, that's fine. That's their thing. But you also can make money and not be known at that level completely without a label. Like
I was reminded that Lil Yachty had a Target commercial about a decade ago with no real major label album out at the time, because the landscape had shifted so drastically that he was a star without a physical product.
Yep. Absolutely, dude. Absolutely. People, at that level, they're selling a persona, right? I mean, they're selling like lifestyle. They're selling an image in the truest sense of the word. They're selling like an image, a character. That's what they're selling, you know.
I was talking to a Cardi fan, and they were lamenting that no album. Cardi fan, Rihanna fan, all of you who have been waiting for something in 2022 that will never happen. And I have to say to all of you, there is no percentage in them releasing an album. No matter how much you want it, they can only lose by producing that product. And you can, and if you want proof of that, Adele's album was 2022, right?
Yeah.
Look at what happened to Adele. She put out a product that was, it was not bad, but it was not the first three albums. And she suffered because of it. She suffered because of previous success. There is no percentage in these artists putting out albums because it only hurts the brand. Cardi B is making more money not releasing music than if she did. Rihanna has no interest in releasing an album. I'm sorry to tell you, if no one in your life has told you to stop waiting for the Rihanna album, stop waiting for it. It's never coming. Why would she mess up the brand by putting out something that... It's like when Michael Jackson released Bad. It was almost foolish because as good as Bad became, he made Thriller. You know what I'm saying? Like, Off the Wall was great. He topped it with Thriller. Then came Bad. Bad is one of the greatest selling albums of all time. And you know what people say? It ain't Thriller.
It ain't Thriller.
You can't win.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, yeah, it's the same reason why, like, Ludacris was one of my favorite rappers of the early 2000s, dude. As soon as he started making those movies,
stop making albums. That was it, man.
That's stop. It. Like, yeah, and I don't blame him. I don't blame him. Yeah.
Look, you know what? For all of you people who think that we're not making sense, look at Chance the Rapper. After Coloring Book, he had the world at his feet. He won an Grammy with no major label deal. He won the Grammy. It was best album that year, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And you guys wanted an album. And he forestalled for many years. And when he finally gave him that album, they took him out behind the woodshed and beat him with a bat. No, they it wasn't what they wanted. They built up this thing in their heads that Chance is going to deliver the magnum opus of all albums, and they destroyed him. And yeah. You know what? I felt bad for him because he was trying to give his fans what they wanted, and he should have done what he had in his heart.
They did him dirty, man. They did him dirty. Yeah, man. No, I no notes on that. That's exactly as I would describe it. I still like Chance, man.
You know what? Chance should do what a lot of artists have ended up doing toward the, let's just be honest, towards the backside of their careers. Just pop up on tracks. Do you know why Jay-Z's not putting out an album? Because he can win with one single. I'll just go on your song. You've already done all the hard work. You got a track. You said something. I'll just come on there, not even talk about what you're talking about. I'll just do my little Jay-Z thing, get shine again, keep my brand strong, and I'm never giving you an album. Because you're only Rick Ross. His fans have demanded work. And you know what? How much happier would Ross have been if he just kept hopping on singles? He doesn't miss on those. Doesn't miss. But the albums, people judge him now.
That's true. He's not Port of Miami. But
I asked you for Trilla. Why didn't you give me Trilla? Because it's 15 years later. That's why I didn't give you Trilla.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let me grow. Let me grow into being a Wingstop mogul.
Right. Oh, man. So, speaking of 15 years later, I think every generation doesn't see the world the same way their parents did. It's impossible because it's like standing on a mountain and then, you know, someone else is walking up a mountain a completely different way because you've already walked that path. The very fact that you walked the path makes it a different path. But it seems like this year, whether it be politics, technology, whatever, we really don't see the world the same way fundamentally as our parents. Like, I don't know if technology has really shifted us to a completely different mountain or not, but you're starting to see this very real divide in, like, the previous generation and what is now. Whether it be from things like pronouns. My mom was just adamantly against pronouns. And while I admit sometimes I think it's a little performative, I get it. But there are things that they are just fundamentally opposed to that. Mm-hmm. Are we just seeing the same thing they saw with their parents and we're just now recognizing it? Or is it really a fundamental shift in the way that the world interacts socially? Yeah, you see the deep question. You weren't ready for a deep question.
I wasn't ready for it, man. I wasn't ready for it. And I don't know if I mentioned I'm aggressively hungover today, so my brain is not working very well. But I do have
Yingling Pale and Tan. If you have not tried it, I am now a Yingling Pale and Tan fan.
A Pale and Tan. I think I've had it. Yeah, it was good. No, I drank way too much wine last night, which is a terrible idea.
You're a 42-year-old woman.
I am, dude. I had a nice Italian white wine with I went over to this good worthwhile tangent while I think of an answer to your question. I went over to a friend's apartment that I hadn't seen in several years, 3 years probably. Yeah, had dinner with him.
Yeah. And you wanted to get your Sex in the City on?
Yeah, and I, you know, uncorked a nice white, a hot buttery shard. So I generally come at that question with the baseline assumption that we aren't that fundamentally different as people, like from our parents, right? Because mm-hmm. we're made up of them. Like try as we might, we are a mixture of our parents. Like, and I see that as I get older, like I notice myself not just thinking the same way that my parents did, but like speaking the same way that my parents do, or like moving the same way my dad does or something like that. Like, you know, that's kind of like the baseline assumption that I have, is that ultimately we share a lot of similarities with how our parents look and think about the world. But what is different, definitely, and is a thing that I keep in mind, is that as we are growing and becoming, they still are growing and becoming as well. And our idea of who they are, as my parent, like my idea of who my mom is like mostly informed by who she was when I was a child living in her house, right? But she is not the same person who was my mom who raised me when I was a child living in her house. She has grown and become somebody else now in the same sort of way that I've grown and become somebody else. And so when I think about, like, I have conversations with my mom or something like that, and she says, you know, she says something that's like maybe more on the conservative end of the political spectrum, and I disagree with it or something like that. I used to be in a place where I would fight with her about those things. And it was important for me to be victorious in the argument. But I'm not at that place anymore because I don't see the value in doing that. I don't need to win an argument. I don't need to change her mind about things. That's not what I fundamentally need to do. What she's doing is like she's saying things in a way to soothe herself. And we all do this. We say things to reassure ourselves that like, yes, our assessment and understanding of the world is correct. So we proclaim our understanding and assessment of the world out to the world so that, you know, we're reassuring ourselves. And I don't see that as like just because I disagree with what she says or whatever, doesn't mean she's evil. Doesn't mean she needs to be corrected. It doesn't mean any of those things. What I take it as, and it doesn't mean that what she's saying is the way that the world actually works or whatever. What I take it as is she is doubling down on, this is who I am. And she is telling herself and reassuring herself that she knows who she is, you know? And that's something that all of us try to do. Absolutely. And fundamentally, dude, like we are going to see. And I know I started this answer by saying that we, you know, have a lot of similarities with our parents, but ultimately we are fundamentally different, right? We're fundamentally different from our parents, and we can't be the same as them. And so the task then isn't to figure out who is right or who is more evolved or who is correct or whose view is, you know, closer to reality. The task is how do we cultivate closeness and connection with people who are so similar and yet so different from us.
So year in the review moment, this last year and probably the last 5 years have given us a lot of moments of past bad behavior popping up and biting you in the ass, you know? And it can be, you know, a statement you made on social media. It can be, you know, Jerry Jones standing on some steps while. Jeez. And I think for me lately, I've been seeing a lot of thought pieces going both ways. Prosecute them for past misdeeds or give them, like, that was 50 years ago. Why are we bringing this up? And I struggle personally with where to apply grace and where not to. Mm. And I've been really I just finished an ethics seminar because I'm really, really like trying to contemplate the place in the world of a lot of these thoughts, and ethics being the science of figuring out what is morally right and what is morally wrong. And what I learned in that ethics class was that, unfortunately, everybody's ethics starts at the place of where they decide it starts. While we assume there are universal truths, in fact, universal truths because of free will start where they decide the universal truth starts. So if I decide that everyone should own a gun, then that is now the universal truth of guns, as far as I'm concerned. So when you start burning guns, you are committing a moral crime. Mm-hmm. But I think, too, you then add in social structure. It's okay to discriminate against someone else based on X if you're from a culture that only adheres to Y. You know, so then X shows up and you're like, wait a minute. We don't eat with left hands over here. What are you doing? Yeah. That guy's a criminal. He's now eating with a left hand. But all that being said, some of this stuff, man, I try to extend grace with some of this stuff. I know people say, well, it was a different time and they had, you know, different thoughts. And I get that. And I try to extend grace, you know. It was okay to call your cousin a little, you know, fruity back in the day. It's not cool to do that now. Don't do that.
Yeah.
stop that. Mm-hmm. We can agree that that's probably a thing that we should all say, yeah, you know what, let's put an end to that. But there's some things where, you know, we're going to forgive Uncle Jimmy for saying that and say, look, man, that we don't do that anymore. But there, like, if you found out Uncle Jimmy murdered an entire building of immigrants, I think we can all agree that was wrong, no matter when. Like, you shouldn't kill immigrants. Where do we draw the line, though? Like, where do we extend grace, and where do we say, hey, you should have known better? Because I would argue, and there's a lot of people that are saying, like, and let's go back to Jerry Jones. He should have known that that was wrong no matter what. Even if we believe that he was just there to figure out, hey, why don't you like these black guys? People are saying he should have always known. I would also, though, playing devil's advocate, say if you grew up in a neighborhood where that's all you heard from sun up to sun down, that can override the inherent morality in you because socially you've been conditioned to think that's how it is. Mm-hmm. Do we extend grace or do we say you should have always known? I don't know. And it seems that question keeps popping up this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, that's a really, really important question. And it's something I've been thinking about a lot more with respect to myself because I think for me, I am quick to extend grace to other people, maybe more quickly than I am to extend grace to myself. Which is a challenging thing, quite frankly. But I don't think that there's any sort of like overarching rule that you can say, you know, that this is the conditions to extend grace in a particular circumstance. And you know, like it's the personal element of whatever situation you're talking about that defines it, right? So, I try to think about, is it. If I observe myself not having gracious thoughts towards somebody, which happens, believe it or not, I try to think, like, what is unresolved or what do I not understand about something, like, that maybe this person did to me or said about me or something like that. Like, what is unresolved there that causes me to keep holding on to this person, like, to allow this person to keep up taking space in my mind and in my emotions and all that sort of energy that I spend mulling it over. Right. Like, so, you know, I think that if I come to a point of understanding about something where like a series of events or something that somebody did, like I understand the why of it, then that's the precondition for me to extend grace to things and, or to people. It's like, how can you be mad? How can you be mad at like a, you know, a rabid dog for trying to bite you? Like that's what it does, right? Don't get mad at things for being the way that they are. Like they're going to be the way that they are. It, like if you can accept things for, you know, how they are, then there's no point in not being graceful about it, right? Like being holding on to anger for somebody. There's a purpose for anger. There's absolutely a purpose for anger. There's a purpose for resentment. There's a purpose for all those things. But their purpose is completed, then they're not useful anymore. And then they start serving a different purpose, you know? And so it's, as weird as it sounds, I don't think the conditions of grace depend on what externally you're thinking about being graceful about. It's more about how do you internally feel about it? At least that's speaking from my perspective.
So 2022, I've decided to live by a couple of different rules, and it fits into this conversation. One of them is extend grace, just as if I wanted that grace extended to me. I am not a perfect man. I have made large and far-ranging mistakes in my life, and am only standing or sitting, as you will, because of grace extended. My default, or at least what I would hope to be my default, is grace. But the other side to that is something that I read fairly recently in which someone said, if the recitation of the things you have done make you look bad, it's not a look, it's who you've been. You know, if the recitation of, if you run down a list of 10 things that I have done, verifiable, empirical things that I have done, and at the end of that list it says bad, that's not you, you know, someone coming after me. Those are things I've done. That means I've been bad. So I need to acknowledge that, and I need to decide if I should make changes. And morally, I don't think we're supposed to be bad people. I don't think that that's the way, that we're supposed to exist in this world as bad people. So I need to then extend that grace to myself to say, look, you know, if I've been bad, then I've acknowledged it, then I have the right to change. And no matter what someone else thinks about that change, I am the only one answerable for the change. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
yeah, man,
those are hard rules to live by, because, you know, I'm a very defensive person. You come at me with a list of 10 things, you best believe that my brain's already started working on the 10 things that I'm about to throw in your face. And I had to teach myself to stop and let the 10 things be the 10 things. And that's hard, man. It's hard.
That's super hard, dude. Oh my God. Yeah, that's, oh man, I'm the exact same way. Like I take criticism super, super personally. I take everything. Like sometimes I feel like I'm a bunch of band-aids on the inside, man. And it's just like, I don't heal anything, and it just, I keep adding to the wounds. But there's that bit about like being graceful to yourself. I agree with you that I don't think that we are supposed to exist as and do bad in the world. Like and I don't think that's what people want fundamentally, but at the same time, there's a pressure, at least, that I put on myself to, like, I have to be so good and like perfect in everything. I have to be funny. I have to be smart. I have to be attractive. I have to be interesting. I have to be all these things to all these people. And because if I'm not, then the affection and attention and closeness that I want from people, I won't have earned that. And so it's been this year for me in particular has been wild in that regard, because I've, I think I've historically been very suspicious of friendship or like looking at friendship as a transactional thing, like, ah, this person is my friend because I do this well, or like they respect that I'm skillful in this way, or I'm, you know, funny to them or whatever. But you know, because of the circumstances, my life changed a lot this year. I've had friends show up for me, like, in ways that I didn't do anything to deserve. I didn't work to get this support and friendship from people. And the things that I've done wrong that I'm ashamed of, like, haven't prevented them from being a friend to me. And so that, like, those are data points that are incongruous to that, you know, previous outlook that I had, that like, you know, being suspicious of friendship and all those kind of, or and by extension, beating myself up for doing things that I'm not proud of. Like, I don't need to continue to beat myself up about that. And actually, beating myself up about it and not extending grace to myself is not giving me the permission to change. That's not giving me that permission. In order to actually do something different, you can't be stuck on the self-punishment phase. You can't. I've had to accept the ugly truth about myself and about the things that I'm capable of doing or saying to people or treating people certain ways. Like, I've had to accept those things so that to see them for what they really are and not just be disgusted by them, but to actually look at them and understand what they are so that I can change them. And so it's a radical act of self-love in order to do that. Like, and I think you and I are probably similar in this way. We excel. I am super good at beating myself up. I am very, very good at being self-deprecating and criticizing myself and focusing on all the things that I've done wrong, you know, hyper-focusing on. Really, really good at that. That's not helpful, man. That's super, super unhelpful. That's super unhelpful.
I had a therapist say this to me one time, and it took me a long time to be able to accept the truth. You know, you can accept something as true, but not accept it as the truth.
Yeah.
And she said to me that no matter what you've done, it does not give the right for anyone to treat you badly, including yourself. And like, I understood it, but it took a very long time for me to accept it as a fact. No matter what I've done, and if I've done something horrible, it does not change the fact that tomorrow's the next day. Make amends, make changes. But if I'm standing in the next day, a date separate from when that occurrence happened, I can't relive it. I can't go back and change. There is no time machine. Hindsight is probably the worst thing that's ever happened to mankind. And I know that there's like Holocaust and things. You know what I'm saying. Hyperbole. It's a hyperbolic statement. But looking backwards and continuing to administer punishment for a day that, you know, I can't ever get back or change, or an action that I can't ever, I can look at that action a million different ways. I can stand in that place a million different times and I should have done this. I can dream about what I would have done. But when I wake up, it's the same thing. Nothing ever can go back. So the only control I have is my moments right now. So I have to extend that grace, like we've talked about, and stop punishing myself for something that honestly can never be recovered from. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people say, oh, I'm going to, you know, make up for it. Can you, though? Or can you demonstrate different behavior going forward? If I'm sent to prison for something, that's punishment. That's a punishment that is, you know, we've all agreed this is the law. That's a punishment. But while I'm standing in that jail, am I actively making up for something? You can't. It's already been done. All I can do is take this time and change. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing we can control is change. We can control our reactions and our change.
Yeah. No, but like, if you're stuck in the shame and self-deprecation, that stops you from being useful and moving forward. Like, if you really want to make amends to somebody, and this is something I've had to contemplate a lot this year, is it's not you beating yourself up because you hurt them in some way doesn't make them not hurt for what you do. You know, it doesn't work out. That's a tough lesson, though.
It really is. That's a tough lesson that honestly, I don't know if I have matured into the fullness of that thought. I
everyday thing. Yeah.
I acknowledge it, but I don't know if I've matured into the fullness of that thought. And I don't know if it's possible to fully mature into the fullness of it. You know, it is what it is some days, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah. So the thing to aspire to and to work towards.
Look at maturity. Look at us growing as people. Another thing that I've been working on this year is understanding that apologies are not for the person who receives it. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I used to make an apology and then get upset when the person wouldn't accept the apology. But the apology was for me. Like, we should all be honest about that. When I apologize, I'm apologizing for the internal harm that I have caused myself by causing you external harm. I cannot change your external harm, but I can try to heal the wound that I've caused myself. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't accept my apology, so be it. But the apology was because I needed to do it, not because you were deserving of it, but I had to acknowledge that I caused that harm. So I'm apologizing for myself towards you. And if you don't accept it, I've still tried to heal the harm that I caused myself by inflicting harm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't an easy like thought process to walk myself through, but I'm doing my best. 2022. I believe that I'm exiting 2022 better than I entered it. There's probably going to be some things I got to acknowledge next year, you know?
Of course, man.
What's that thing? Ripples in the pond? Who knows what ripples I've put out there.
But January 1st is just a day.
I don't do resolutions? I don't do them.
Nah, I don't.
I don't do them. I just know that, look, you know, this year I should probably try and recognize something else that I need to, you know, acknowledge. You know, one thing I've been struggling with this year is acknowledging the good that I can do as well. Like, I grew up thinking it wasn't cool to like tell people, like to acknowledge that you're smart. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I know I'm smart. I'm not stupid. Like, I can do some things, but like the verbal acknowledgement of it, I always felt like that was bad. Like, I can't say that, you know, I'm better than that person. Like, I know it. They most likely know it, but I always felt like it was wrong to like verbally acknowledge it. So I'm working on that. Like, to just say to myself, like, it's okay to be the smartest person in the room sometimes. Like, it's not something to be ashamed of.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. And I've struggled with the same thing in my life. And I think it's the flip side of like looking at your faults accurately, like not, you know, catastrophizing them. And the flip side of that is like acknowledging your strengths accurately. It's not, and you know, not minimizing those as well. It's, you know, it's about being honest with yourself, being honest and authentic with yourself. Yeah, and like, the good parts are hard to be honest and authentic about just as much as the bad parts in some cases.
We changed the subject briefly. I don't know about you, but I feel like in 2022, I hit the wall socially. Like, I don't want more people. I'm done with more people. I know that that's not realistic, but like, if you're a good friend, you tend your friend garden, if you will. Like, I'm not one of those people that thinks I got to hear from you every day for us to be friends.
Right.
But at the same time, you got to like tend your friend garden, and I'm just exhausted a little bit sometimes. Like, there's some friends who really need to be tended, and like you gotta, and you know, it's that constant. This is a lot of work. This is my friend, though. I've invested friend capital, so I'm not going to throw that friend capital away. But, Christ, I don't want to answer the phone this time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, have I hit the wall socially? I go to these functions, and they introduce me to new people, and I'm just exhausted already. I don't want to. You can tell when someone's trying to make that effort to move past acquaintance into friend, and I'm just like, I don't have it.
Yeah, dude, I totally get you. I don't think it's wrong. I don't think it's wrong. Like, also, it's just being older, dude. It's just being older. It's like, I don't need a whole bunch of new friends. It's right. True.
Like, I'm sure you're a very amazing person, and you've got a lot going for you. It looks like we could probably have some fun. I just don't got it.
Yeah, we're not going to chill like that. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's okay.
And they invite you places, and I don't even want to lie anymore about, like, it's rude, though, so I don't want to just be like, yo, I don't want to do that. But it's like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, just check with me that day, and then I just don't answer the phone.
That's, yeah. That's one thing that I've tried to do less of is just not respond to things. Like, if I've tried to get in the habit of saying no when I want to say no, right? Instead of just, like, coming up with an excuse or something. Or, like, making up some small lie about something. Like, why do that? That's weakening myself, you know? I should just say no. That's okay, you know?
We're coming to the end. So let's talk about what next year looks like. We haven't even hit the holidays fully yet. First of all, sorry, just completely. You guys need to stop starting Christmas before Halloween. Like, it's out of hand. It's out of hand. I went to Target in, I think it was like maybe a week and a half before Halloween, because I needed to pick up something. I don't remember what it was. The Christmas section was already up and empty. Like, picked over. That's ridiculous.
That's disrespectful.
I was asked if I wanted to put the Christmas tree up a few days before Thanksgiving. My response was, can we just let December 1st be here before we do that type of thing?
Yeah, please. Please.
Also, I don't care if you left your or your Christmas stuff up all year. Don't apologize to me for it. It's your house. You know, there's a lot in here that I don't really do. I'm not going to judge you for that. Maybe, like, the thing that just crawled underneath the couch, I don't know what that was. You seem very comfortable with it. You think I'm worried about the Christmas tree?
It's your house.
Right? You know what? I'll just stop coming over here if the Christmas tree offends me that much.
I don't get mad at the Tex-Mex restaurant for having the lights up all year round.
Right. You know what? Don't apologize to me for things in your house, because I won't apologize to things in my house. Also, you can leave. You come over. Why do you have that on the wall? Champ, you don't live here.
You do not live here, champ. Nope. Nope. Right. Not you. Yep.
That's okay. Why did you put a TV on a stand instead of the wall? My guy. You don't live here. Did you hand me money?
I'm not consulting you on the process.
So anyway, what's the year hold next year? Like, is there some tentpole moment that you want to have next year?
Some what kind of moment?
Tentpole, you know.
Some tentpole.
All right, moment. No, that just seemed. let's not ever do that again.
I was gonna say, you know, I'm gonna leave that one alone. Shoot, man. I mean, I will have a new job in the coming year. I will be living in a different space. I'm going to have the same group of friends, probably.
You staying stateside?
What did you say?
Stateside?
Yeah. I'll be in the States. I might. Well, I'm not going to reveal any of the job stuff just yet. But yeah, and honestly, the thing that is going to be different is I think I'm going to be a lot more. I know myself a lot better. This past year, let me be clear. This past year has sucked, bro. This past year has been awful in so many ways. But I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for all of it because I've had to, through very uncomfortable circumstances, let go of a lot of shit that is not serving me and be honest with myself about a lot of shit that I need to be honest with myself about. And I feel a lot better going into 2023 knowing that I know myself a lot better. And so, you know, and that's the thing is like, I there's things I wish I didn't do or didn't say or whatever, but I like who I am, dude. I like who I am. And so that's, what's going to be different about 2023. I think is I know who I am a lot better and I'm pretty swell guy.
I'll leave you with this that I came up with. I'm not going to lie and say I heard it somewhere. Catching a brick helps you build a building.
Man, absolutely.
I remember, you know how you have to like do the self-reflection and you realize time has passed and you look and say, what did I do with that time? And part of my acknowledging good in me, I looked at the last decade and I caught some bricks, man. I like bricks. And I realized, and you and I were talking beforehand, that all of those bricks led to me being happy with where I stand right now.
Yeah, man.
There was a year that I lost pretty much everything. When life says, draw four, and then someone, and they just keep doubling up on it. Yeah.
Congratulations, dickhead. Yeah.
And I found myself, to make ends meet, working for one of the security companies, selling alarm systems, mm-hmm. a place I never thought I would be. And I was literally the only way that I was making $300 a week and trying to, and after taxes, that's $230 for those of you who are doing the math, $230 a week. And the only way to increase that was to sell alarm systems to people who desperately did not need it. I was knocking doors in the hood. You know, some people joke about being in the hood. A lot of you don't actually know what the hood is like. The hood is where you should know somebody to come in there. That's the hood. Like,
yeah.
All of you people who say that something's ghetto, that's not ghetto. You don't know what, you don't want to be in there without like a cosign after 6 p.m. because it's about to get real tight. And I'm knocking on doors, asking people to sign up for a security alarm system. I'm not going to say what company it was. And every day was worse than the day before. Knowing that I'm actively exploiting people who can't afford what's going to happen after this free system stops being free. And that's the only way I can keep food on the table. And I hit the wall. I mean, I hit the wall and they told me, okay, you've been here a year. Starting tomorrow, you're not going to get that $230 every 2 weeks because you need to do it all on your own. And I didn't have it, man. I couldn't do it. I was already feeling horrible about doing it in the first place for $230. I couldn't do what was going to be necessary to make that a steady check. And I said, look, I am done with this. I can't do it. It's not working. And it was whichever federal holiday happens in February, the end of February, I can't recall what it was, President's Day maybe, something like that. And I was sitting on a couch at a friend's house, and I sent out one resume. That's it, just one. And I got a call the next day, and I thought it was a joke. And a guy said, yeah, we saw your resume, we want to bring you in for blah, blah, blah. So I thought it was a, you know, I thought it was a scammer. Yeah, all right. When can we talk to you for an interview? Champ, call back whenever. at noon, call came in. Yeah, we saw your resume. You talked to somebody earlier. That's when I realized it was real. And that's when all of the disparate parts of my life came together in one pure hustle moment of talking that talk. Mm. And it changed everything because they offered me a job I didn't deserve. That, and that's grace. That's God. If you don't believe in God, I'm sorry. For you, but you know, the universe, if you will, give me your shot. Mm-hmm. They always say luck, and what was it? Luck is when preparation meets something, opportunity or something. Opportunity,
yeah, preparation.
And I hate sayings, but that was that moment where like, yo, if I can get in the door, I swear to God, I'm going to work harder than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And the bricks that I caught help me build the building that I'm in now. So it's not like it's going to turn. It all, like, I'm not one of those people that believes that it all evens out, because I think that's a lie that we tell kids. That,
yeah,
parents out there, you have to stop telling your kids that being good makes it all even out, because it
sometimes doesn't work out.
All you can prepare your child for is the moment when the door opens to rush through and outwork everybody. That's what I'm going to tell my kids. It's not going to even out. Never does. You could be up, you could be down, but opportunity is the only thing you can control. You're at that point right now, my friend. You're building your opportunity. You just wait for the door.
True, man. I'll step right through.
Yeah, and then outwork everybody.
You know that's what I'll do. You know that's what
I'll do. Look, we've been gone from the people for a year, almost a year. And I hope that we won't be gone from them again for another year. But if you have to leave them with one thing, what would it be?
Be kind to yourself. Be kind to yourself.
If you want to send me money, that I will leave you with my with my Cash App. That's what I'll leave you with. Send me money. Send Sam money too.
Follow me on just follow me on Instagram. DOTSRJ at DOTSRJ. Follow me on Instagram. I make music and all sorts of good stuff. Post thirst traps. You'll love it.
One.
Peace.